On our way home from a local lake beach adventure recently, the kids and I fell to brainstorming, as you do when there's a global pandemic and entertainment options are limited, the most disgusting flavors of ice cream we could imagine. What if instead of rainbow sherbet, you ordered toenail clippings and cream? What if instead of mint chocolate chip, there was slug swirl? We laughed and laughed. This is the kind of imagination that is keeping us company this summer. Fun and a little desperate. When I got home, I checked social media. "This is about reimagining," tweeted Wintana Melikan, executive director of Minnesota Voice, a coalition of organizations working toward permanent social, racial, and economic justice. Reimagining is relevant to my transformed summer, originally intended to include travel to both coasts, but instead spent in near isolation. My family had imagined and anticipated, saved, and planned. But then we had to reimagine. It's been hard. Even holding close are many blessings and privileges. There is pain and fear. Amy and I don't know when we will next see our aging parents, or our siblings, or nieces and nephews. Hopefully soon. Hopefully again at all. Melikan's tweet wasn't about my personal disappointment. Her concern is the larger context of George Floyd's murder, a recent spark in the long burning fire of resistance to racism in all forms and places, especially including police violence. Just to remind folks, the whole comment ran, defund MPD, that's the Minneapolis Police Department, doesn't mean the absence of safety. It means making a plan for the abundance of safety. We don't just remove tomorrow. We have planning meetings. We do budget reviews. We look at the harm that's done. We fully fund orgs already doing the work. This is about reimagining as much as it's about defunding. This hit me hard. She means imagination past the realm of the sweetly fanciful, like joking about ice cream on a hot day. And of course, we also stopped for actual ice cream in traditional flavors at a cafe with a walk-up window where we could maintain appropriate physical distance. As difficult as it has been to reimagine my summer, and now to reimagine the fall on a variety of fronts, maybe the ask of the moment is even bigger. If today's political work is about reimagining one of the core institutions of our society, am I prepared to do that? Alexis Pauline Gums co-presented a workshop at the Fellowship a few years back. She calls herself a queer Black troublemaker and Black feminist love evangelist. And she's a renowned independent scholar, poet, activist, and educator based in North Carolina. She also shared some public thoughts about how to approach something as overwhelmingly comprehensive as reimagining society. She asks this intriguing set of questions. What if abolition isn't a shattering thing, Not a crashing thing. Not a wrecking ball event. What if abolition is something that sprouts out of the wet places in our eyes, the broken places in our skin, the waiting places in our palms, the tremble in my mouth when I turn to you? What if abolition is something that grows? Something that grows. Worship leader Cindy Darling shared about a time of her growth in a creative and artistic healing sense. Something that grows. This way of putting it is helpful to me, soothing and reassuring, even as it calls me forth in brave and new ways. To unlearn what I was taught as a child about who is worthless and who gets to decide. To make and stick to risky commitments. To help my kids navigate heartbreaking truths. To relearn my values in ways that are clearer and kinder. These are things that can grow in wet, broken, waiting, trembling places if we can bring our imagination. These past months, we are facing a political uprising that is in no way new and yet still very much forming. Whether you've been in movement trenches your whole life, or are just realizing that you might be called to understand and act, or you're somewhere in the middle, where I imagine most of you join me in residing. This requires my, your, and our attention. The Black Lives Matter revival is at its core an opportunity for imaginative growth. Unitarian Universalist history can help. In researching a service about Black humanism during my first year serving this fellowship, I read about the Reverend Lewis Allen McGee. Long before activists were tweeting about reimagination, Reverend McGee said that to be in a complicated world of suffering and still have the drive and hope to improve it requires what he called creative imagination. McGee was born into an AME, that's African Methodist Episcopal family, in Pennsylvania in 1893. By 1927, he had found the early humanist movement and its many illustrious Unitarians, including signers of the 1933 Humanist Manifesto, which proclaimed that religion must work increasingly for joy in living, and that humanists demand a shared life in a shared world. These ideas are alive and well in today's Unitarian Universalism, thanks in part to McGee. McGee wanted to enter the ministry, but was told he would have to supply his own church, since a Black man could not serve a white congregation. And there were only white Unitarian congregations. Yet in his mid-50s, he attended Meadville Lombard Theological School in Chicago. In 1948, he founded a Unitarian congregation, a predominantly Black but somewhat multiracial church called the Free Religious Fellowship on Chicago's South Side. "We believe," he preached, "in the creative imagination as a power in promoting the good life, For him and other Black humanists of his time, creative imagination wasn't an abstract concept, too vague to be pinned down. It lives in human capacity. Our imagination helps us resist real life suffering. And he especially meant racism. Living all of this, that's a process. McGee wrote that being alive means a continuing search for truth. And therefore, he called life an adventurous quest. Considering everything he experienced, I suspect he must have been an optimist to call existence an adventurous quest. Adventurous quest is a far easier sell when I'm giggling about ice cream with my kids, sand in my shoes from swimming. It gets harder when I hear about my Portland, Oregon hometown, where recently deployed federal troops intentionally attacked medics, a literal war crime, according to the Geneva Convention. It sours when I put myself in the place of George Floyd's brother, who, in the aftermath of his sibling's grisly murder, recollected how they did laundry together in the sink as kids. What about Breonna Taylor, murdered for what seems to be no actual reason in the middle of the night as she slept curled against her lover? Good for Oprah for putting Breonna's face on the cover of O magazine. But we also need state accountability. Elijah McClain, did you hear about him? He begged for his life, trying to reason with his attackers that he was a vegetarian and a good person, just different, just trans and disabled, not bad, not wrong, as police tortured him into brain death, and then he actually died. Can you imagine? I've barely scratched the surface of recent news. And McGee's insistence that life is an adventurous quest is far from my mind. My initial reaction to these horrors, which I guess I am lucky to only imagine, although there's considerable trauma being in a Black family these days, my first impulse is to shut down my imagination for two reasons. The first is that I don't want to clearly picture such ugliness. The other reason I sometimes turn away from imagination is my fear that envisioning positivity might be disrespectful in the face of pain. McGee helped release me from this sense of unease by teaching that it is of the utmost ethical importance to imagine, to do it creatively, to do it in ways that keep our skin in the game, not turned away from it. We shouldn't obsess over every detail of torture and inhumanity that exists. If this is where you dwell, then get help. Come to me, and I will try to help you figure out how to get out of that loop. But we should, in responsible ways, know enough to believe, to really believe in our hearts and our guts that unfair suffering exists. Imagination is not callous toward suffering. It is one way we pay attention. Our creative energy is how we can honor something that matters, like Black life. We are being asked to nurture a vision about a defunded police force, to learn about it and commit to some kind of action that will help make all of us safer. Underneath that ask, that great call, is the imperative to keep alive our creative imagination, to visualize how life could be better. This can be one of our best resources. Practically, that means not going to sleep on this stuff. I need my spiritual community to make sure I don't do that now that BLM isn't the top headline around here anymore. I want to keep reimagining new possibilities about life, from ice cream to public safety. Staying present, especially for those of us who can put it aside, not George Floyd's brother, but me, if I want. It's a slog. It's okay that it doesn't always feel like an adventurous quest. The pride and motivation I felt all those years ago when the Black Lives Matter banner went up was more energizing than weighing COVID concerns against attending recent protests. And that was infinitely more satisfying than the soul-searching questions that woke me in the night about what I can and should be doing to keep these issues aflame locally, after I heard that a young Black person who has been rapidly emerging as one of the Fox City's leaders in this arm of the movement has received so many death threats that she's done, she's out, she's dormant. In Unitarian Universalism, we don't talk enough about how sometimes our spiritual commitments tie us to the ugliness of life. This is an underdeveloped area of thought and experience for our religious tradition. Creative imagination is at least part of the conversation, and perhaps even a partial answer. We can all find ways to turn away from today's moral issues. We are legitimately busy. There are other real priorities. But oh, what a shame it would be for any of us to miss out on the imagination and creativity inherent in resistance. Defunding proposals aren't just about moving decimal points in budgets, although that needs to happen. Minnesota activists have called for comprehensive sex ed in schools, like lessons on consent, bodily autonomy, and healthy relationships, as a way to help prevent gender-based violence. I never thought of that connection. Folks on the ground in Minneapolis have already organized community fire brigades and a people's ambulance. How do they work? What's the logistical structure? In Eugene, Oregon, there is a network of teams that deploy a medic and a crisis worker with mental health training to emergency calls. This gets me thinking about what else we could deploy immediately on an emergency basis, like groceries. Across the globe, the universal income framework is reimagining how we could use everyone's basic needs as a starting point, not a punitive afterthought. We might find encouragement for these ideas and more from David White, who reminded us in our reading earlier in the service to pay attention to the visible and the invisible, working together in common cause to produce the miraculous. So may we in this life, trust to those elements we have yet to see or imagine. In a few minutes, we will have congregational response where we share with each other our own reflections and life stories about the themes of the service. In this way, we can support and maybe even enhance our imagination. While we listen to our special music, you might want to just be present with it. Or if you would like to contribute to the conversation, please type into the chat box. We might not be able to lift up everything, but we'll do our best to invite in a variety of perspectives.